I see Insight 7 just making it so easy to know, like to be confident in what you know about your product.
We're really obsessed about the user experience. The biggest lesson on this journey has been around, like, don't start writing code as the first thing. Like, don't start writing code. You're going to pay for it, either in lost time, lost money. You lose tens of thousands of dollars building the wrong stuff. Don't start with the code. Start with the customer experience. What are you trying to ship? And once you nail that experience, then you start writing code to build the experience. Like, this is a hard lesson. And so that impact is really important for me, for the team. That's what we're about. We really want to help customers be successful and help people create better products out there. And if we achieve that, then we're really successful as a company. My name is Odun Odubanjo. I am co-founder and CEO at Insight 7. Excited to be sharing my experiences and paths to building Insight 7 today.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Spotlight. This podcast is for curious minds and aspiring innovators who are leading the charge in the research revolution. We dive deep to discuss inspiring, informative, and offbeat conversations on product research and strategy. My name is Iwalola Shobowale, and I am a product research and strategy lead at a leading technology company in Nigeria. Today, we're joined by a special guest, Odun Odubanjo, the co-founder and CEO of Insight 7. Insight 7 is a customer insight AI tool that is revolutionizing how product teams analyze customer feedback to make data-driven decisions 10 times faster. Odun is no stranger to the entrepreneurial world, having founded and successfully monetized multiple ventures across various industries, from digital media to cybersecurity. His extensive experience in product strategy, innovation, and enterprise sales and marketing brings a wealth of knowledge to our discussion today. So get ready to dive into the world of customer insights, product discovery, and development as we explore Odun's journey and learn from his expertise. Let's jump right in. So thank you so much, Odun, for joining today.
My pleasure.
It's really fantastic having you here. Like, I feel like you're going to have so much to share with the listeners. So, Odun, can we take a trip down memory lane? I'd really like you to share with us your journey so far. How did you get here? I mean, I've already gone through your LinkedIn. I feel like you could be my brother right now. I know so much about you, right? But how did you get here? I'd really like you to share that if you can.
Fantastic. It's my pleasure being here, and I'm super excited to share some of the experiences I've had and just have this conversation on this topic. In terms of my background and journey to get to where I am today, it's been quite a journey. So started out as a software engineer in the early days. And while I was in uni, I did an internship at Google and, started to work on like large scale data, platforms for the African market during that internship. And that really opened me up to like what it means to build for users at scale, and also got me really fascinated about data. And that was my first experience working with big data. And out of uni, got the opportunity to start out a company called Twin Pine. Elo and DG. You probably know that company as Terragon today, but that was how it started. So started that we built this, expanded the product across multiple African countries, Kenya, Ghana, South Africa, and we did quite well. So built that out, scaled that product, and we eventually evolved that into a marketing technology play. Helping companies reach their consumers on mobile, but leveraging the power of big data, understanding the segments, the users, the profiles, and using that to really target consumers on behalf of businesses. In between that, I did a master's degree at UCL in London, went to study, web science and big data analytics. I just knew that you know, I had to do more around data, and I was really curious. And so that was another really good experience. And then at some point, you know, moved out to Toronto and did a stint in cybersecurity, and that's where I kind of had the idea for Insight 7. So I had this experience where we're expanding our, the company's product into a new market, and I wasn't like I felt like we didn't do a good job of researching the market or understanding the market, the customers, the competition, what we're going after, who we're building for. And we essentially ran that as a project instead of like a product discovery process. And so I knew there needed to be something better for companies to use to make decisions about products, customers, and that was where the idea came from. We also had this tool then, Gartner, that we were paying a lot of money for, and not everyone within the organization had access to that platform. And so I felt like there had to be a better way to democratize insights within organization. And that's when I started thinking about this problem that we're solving today. After that, I joined Shopify, and I built merchant and developer products in the channel space. Spent about 3 years there, and interestingly found the same problem of, you know, how do you make the right decisions about what you need to build? How do you solve customer problems at scale? How do you leverage research that other teams have worked on? You know, different kinds of problems in this space. And yeah, started working on Insight 7 with a team on the side. And at some point I thought, you know, it was time to go full time. And yeah, here we are 1 year later. We have, you know, paying customers, we have users who are giving us really good feedback. And I'm really excited for you know, the impact that we're having and the future of what we're doing.
That's amazing, Odun. So you mentioned a couple of things, right? And I mean, you hinted at it already. You said even with larger organizations, that problem still persists, right? Of conducting research in, you know, in a continuous way. So what made this particular problem be the one you want to solve? Because there are a lot of problems, right, existing in the atmosphere. So what made this the particular problem you wanted to solve?
That's a great question. So being a two-time founder, this is my third startup. I wanted to make sure that first, at the time I went back to like work for other companies, I knew that I wanted to be mentally prepared for, you know, startups again. I knew I was going to do one more startup, and I felt like I had just the energy for one more, and that would be it. And so I was very careful about what I was going to work on. And that's why it also took long to start. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was working on the right opportunity. I think some of the prior experiences I also had, I felt like one of the biggest determinants for startups is size of the market. How big is the market? So I wanted to make sure that we were playing in a big enough market where we could expand and grow and offer multiple things to customers, and that would make us, you know, more successful, or at least increase our chances of success. And so that was one of the factors. I wanted something I was passionate about. I wanted something that an area where the problem hadn't been solved. I wanted an opportunity that was going to be global, and I wanted the market to be massive enough. So these were some of the factors that was like my checklist for what to go after. And so over like 3 years, I kept comparing every other idea opportunity to this one. This one stayed. It remained at the top of the list. And then I knew, it was time.
I love that process. So you said over 3 years. So, I mean, stories I've heard, it seems like as soon as someone comes across an idea, they do a little bit of research and they are like all in if they have the money, right? And you being a third-time founder, you could have actually jumped on this earlier, I assume, right? So it's interesting that you actually waited for 3 years, right? But like, what was there something that, how did you validate the idea? So, you know, you mentioned, you know, you wanted a market that's big enough, right? And you wanted something that would have impact. How did you validate the idea? Who did you talk to? What was that process like?
Well, that's a great question. And just to like touch on the 3 year period, incubation period, idea incubation period, it wasn't just about those things that I mentioned. I think two other things was, one, I wanted to build enough relationships. I knew that we're going to it was going to be a global play. And so I needed to build relationships in the new markets that I was trying to get us to play in. And I also wanted to have a better understanding of the market. And so like the first company I worked for, when I moved to Toronto, 2 weeks in, the CEO asked me like, you know, we just had like a quick coffee chat. And I guess based on all the things I shared about my entrepreneurial experience, was like, why are you not starting a company? 2 weeks
Imagine
in.
That.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like, why are you not starting a company? I'm like, you know, I just told him I'm not ready. But it was those things, you know, building the right relationships, having enough understanding of the market, and then having a clear idea of what you want to, problem you want to solve. I kind of validated it to an extent before setting out. And so in terms of how we validated, you know, this opportunity, to be honest, it was things as basic as, hey, are there products out there serving this need? You know, I didn't want to go into a space where we're the ones trying to create a new solution that never existed. I think one of the best ways to create value today in any industry, not just technology, is to go after an existing market and just do that thing better, 10 times better. Mm-hmm. Like it's been validated over and over. You're better off.
Right.
It's less risky to go into an existing market and do it 10 times better. And so I looked at a lot of the products in this space. One, it was still emerging in terms of, you know, 3-5 year old products in the market. So it was an emerging space, but I wasn't satisfied with the product I was seeing. I felt there was a need for a simpler, you know, easier to use product, very intuitive. And then there was an opportunity to also, you know, provide a solution that solves the end-to-end problem, not just like a fragmented piece of it. So that was the vision. I wanted us to provide that end-to-end, you know, platform that would solve, that would help people understand customers, automate their research workflow, and make, you know, decisions very quickly in terms of what to build, how to, where to invest in their product development process. And yeah, that was it. So looking at the market, seeing the opportunity, in terms of existing companies, existing products that were making money, that were growing well, and also on the user side, still validating that there were many companies that were still doing research manually till today. And I think that's the larger, that's where the real opportunity is. Like, so many people are still using documents and spreadsheets and PowerPoints to do research. And that is a very archaic way. I'm still fascinated how in the age of AI, we're still working this way.
I can attest to that.
But I think part of it is that we haven't built, like, those products that will solve this problem haven't existed. And so for us, and then also like changing habits and behavior is hard. So how do we make that easy for people to switch and do things in a different way? Those are kind of like the things that we're spending time on now.
Yeah, I can totally attest to that. I mean, that's one of the issues that we're facing even now, right? And you're totally right. You know, how can we still be having these issues? Like, why is it that other things are being developed but not in this space? And yes, I think I really like how you've explained that. But it's very clear you're an experienced founder. Anyone listening to you can tell this is not your first time, because you're speaking from a place of experience. Like how you mentioned that, you know, you had to make the relationships to actually get you to this point, right? So yeah. I think that's something that, you know, apart from the technology, that's something that maybe a lot of people don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So is there anything in your past experience that maybe prepared you for this? From the conversation we're having so far, right? It seems like Insight 7 is your baby, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it just because I'm a research person? But to me, it sounds like Insight 7 is your baby. Like, you want to take care of this baby and you have, like, you know, huge plans for Insight 7. But I'd love to know what you think prepared you for this moment, for this time.
No, absolutely. I think it's just like having worked on multiple ventures. I mean, I mentioned that like I had done 2 startups, but I've also had other like failed ventures that I don't mention, right? Mm-hmm. I've had a startup like almost 10 years ago now. There was a startup I started to do like hyperlocal delivery. Deliver like groceries in 90 minutes to people in Lagos. And I was really excited about the opportunity. I think it could have been really disruptive at the time because, yeah, you have a lot of traffic and you need stuff So the idea was, how can you help people get those things? And we did some decent volume of business in the first couple of months.
Amazing.
Yeah, we did a partnership with one of these popular health food company. I think So Fresh or something. We did a deal with them. We're helping them with like smoothie delivery. And so like we were getting demand. People would reach out to us, you know, want to order something. We'd go pick it up. We deliver it. But then the whole like logistics of operating that kind of business in Lagos without funding, within 3 to 4 months, I was like, okay, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I'm ready. I don't think I'm ready for this. Like, let me just stay with the media business that we had then. And so, you know, when you have this kind of experiences, you're now, you spend more time thinking about what does it take to be successful in a venture before you start out, before you spend a dime, you want to think about it. And so it's, how do you make sure that you have the funding? How do you make sure that you have the relationships, you know, you need? How do you make sure that you validated the opportunity as clearly as possible before you start building? And even when you start building, how do you build in a way that you're not just wasting resources? You're building things people want, and that takes you to product market fit faster, helps you make money faster, things like that. And so, like, yeah, those are some of the things that I have learned the hard way. You know, how not to build. And I think that's just helping, you know, guide the execution today.
Yeah, I'm sold. Like, how do I invest in Inside 7? is there room? I don't have much money, but I want to start earning profits by next year.
let's talk afterwards.
Okay. So if I want to be you in like the next 5 years, right? If I want to be Odun and I want to create something this amazing, what should I be reading? What should I be watching? What should I be listening to? What are you reading? Like, I want to know what's forming your thought processes nowadays. Mm.
Yeah, there are a couple of, a ton of resources in the startup, you know, build kind of space to guide you. There are lots of books. One of the recent books that I'm reading is The Mom Test, which kind of guides you in terms of how to, you know, ask customer interview questions and sales, you know, interview questions. Also just read a book about sales, like getting that first sales process going within the team or within the organization. I can't remember what it's called. So it's books like that. The Four Steps of the Epiphany by Steve Blank is another good one. Kind of helps you figure out like customer discovery process and plan how to just set up like a clear process for learning from customers and building the right things and iterating from there. So there are many books like that. And of course, the traditional product management books, you know, Matt Gagan, books that kind of like help you, you know, make the right decisions when it comes to, you know, building and then go to market as well. And then I consume a lot of YouTube content, people talking about how they build their SaaS companies, you know, how they got their first 100 customers. I think the YC videos are also really good. Like Y Combinator they've open sourced the playbook for building, for starting startups and getting momentum. And so right now, I think maybe outside of trying to plug into a network, YC has opened up the playbook for anyone to like tap into their experience and the learnings from all the startups they funded in the past, right? And everything is free. So those are some of the things that I use to kind of like some ways refresh what I already know, but also learn new things and make sure that we're on the right track.
That's awesome, Odun. Thank you for sharing. So I'll try to find everything you mentioned and I'll list them in the show notes so that we can be like you. before we enter your DM, so we can actually, you know, have that mind thought process that you have, right?
Thank you
for sharing. So I want to know, and I think the people listening to would have this going in their heads right now, what are the things you do to make your own business customer centric? What are the processes you have in place, you know, that take it to the next level, basically?
Yeah, that's a great question, and to be honest, it's a hard one to pull off. Because the typical kind of like way that the average team executes is like, hey, we have this idea, and we know what we want to build and we know what customers want, and you're trying to like go in that direction very quickly. And so for you to be customer-centric, you have to fight that habit. You have to like, it's a daily thing. You're checking yourself like, hey, who has told us this stuff is important? How did they describe it? What exactly are we? Do we understand it clearly? Do we need to talk to them some more? What are the processes, you know, that we have in place to make sure this is happening in a more automated way? How are we collecting feedback from customers? How are we processing that and circulating that with the team? So these are questions I ask myself on a daily basis. It's not a, there's no company that has it figured out. That's what I'm going to say. And it doesn't matter how big that company is. It doesn't matter if it's the big tech companies. But many of, a number of the big tech companies don't have a good enough product discovery process, to be fully transparent. Wow. And so it's work in progress. You just have to figure out, you know, your own way. How do you co-create solutions with your customers? And for us, what we try to do is spend time understanding customers. I had, you know, feedback sessions with, you know, some of our customers this week. And you tell them, hey, can you show me how you experience the product? What are the challenges? What can be better? Here are some ideas we're working with. What does that, how does that sound to you? And then when we have early prototypes of what we're trying to build next, we also do that feedback session with them, show them what it looks like. And it works. Like, there are certain things that we chose not to build because customers told us, I'm not interested in that. It's not valuable to me. And we didn't waste time, didn't waste engineering resources building that feature because we thought it was great. And so baking like the customer feedback process into the product development process is a game changer. It will save every company almost half of their R&D spend annually. So instead of rebuilding software, you're shipping things people want, right? It's well established that about 50% of things we ship and are used by customers everywhere, you know.
Wow.
Everywhere in the world is established. We just ship features. Now, some people tell you, oh, we shipped it because this one customer said they won't buy our product without it. But at the end of the day, you still have a lot of things that customers are asking for that you haven't built. And so, you know, very, very important to make sure that, you know, the entire product development process has the customer, who's the most important stakeholder in that process, to make sure you're co-creating solutions with them. Yeah,
so I find that so interesting. You mentioned how, you know, it's actually a mindset shift. And I think that's something even I encounter in my personal, in my role presently. So especially for a large organization, and, you know, you hinted that even large organizations don't have this figured out. It's because there's so many people who have the, shall I say, old mindset, as, and they're not, you know, familiar with the need to actually, you know, take in the new mindset. So I find that it's really interesting that you've, you know, noted that. And yeah, I'd love to hear more about that. Can you talk about some of the challenges that, you know, you face? Maybe just name one or two that you face and how you've come across, like how you've resolved them within your team, like in trying to get
so like product right on the product side, right? Product customer
yes,
side.
Please.
Yeah, so in terms of challenges, I think the first one would be like, how do you get like the team aligned around your own view of the customer? So that's the first thing, right? How do you make sure that you're all aligned? Like, you're co-creating this solution. I still serve as the PM on the team. And then we have engineers, we have, you know, designers, and then we're trying to co-create the solutions together, right? But how do I make sure that the understanding, we have a shared understanding of the customer, the pain, behaviors, the desires, before we go into solutioning or try to solve any problem? And so one of the things I try to do there is to invite some of them to some of the interviews with customers so that they get firsthand feedback. They have more empathy for the customer. And then they're able to bring better ideas to our solutioning, you know, sessions, right? Or at least share the recordings with them, you know, share summaries. Hey, here's what I learned from this customer interview. Check it out. The challenge, though, is like catching up on 30 minutes, you know, 1 hour recordings, the average person wouldn't do that. And so how do you, and that, those are some of the problems we're trying to solve with our product. Like, how do you summarize this interview and share clips with the user or with your team so that they have shared context about the customer? So that would be one of the challenges. I would say the other one is around, like, when you start, especially at this early stage where you're still trying to figure out where the biggest opportunities to focus are, how do you balance different customer views and opinions and feedback, and you start to prioritize things to build? And that also requires a lot of experience. So I think having a product management background, super helpful in terms of what we're doing. So I'm able to use that experience to make those hard decisions. But yeah, that would be the other challenge. You know, how do you prioritize, you know, your investments based on all the feedback that you get? How do you tune out the noise? Because sometimes you're hearing from customers, you also hear some, you know, noise in the feedback process. So how do you tune that out and say, hey, they mentioned this, but maybe this is not as important as they made it sound. What is really critical, and how many other people have that same experience of that critical pain, so that we can then prioritize that and solve that? Yeah, those would be some of the things that I would say, like, we face challenges with.
I'm sure every PM or researcher listening right now is probably like nodding their heads. They're probably like on the same page, right? Because I think all of us are facing the same issues, and it's actually really interesting. Basically, Insight 7 is trying to solve all this. And even within your team, you know, you've spotted those issues and you're using Insight 7 to solve that as well. I love that. Thank you for sharing. So I'm really interested to know. You said, yeah, you've already shared that, you know, there are paying customers who are using Insight 7, who you're listening to, you know, to get feedback from them. I wonder if they've shared any success stories with using Insight 7, if, you know, something has changed within their team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest feedback so far has been around how much time savings you can get with the product. And so you talk to customers, you know, one part of the job is like transcribing that and then analyzing the transcripts and then making sense of that, you know, extracting themes, sentiments, insights, and then generating a report. That entire workflow is painful. Yeah, so in terms of success stories, we've had a number of them. We had an agency in Jamaica let us know that they were using our product to automate their entire user research workflow. So take loading in videos, transcribing them, and then analyzing the transcripts and generating a report. Another product manager in Canada was letting us know how they used our product to do the same thing, you know, transcribe videos, analyze, and then download the report, you know, and share that with their team. Had a UX researcher as well let us know in Montreal, you know, reach out, and he was essentially just educating us on the product, like, hey, here's how it works. Here's what I was able to do. I find it fascinating. I was able to generate this report from all these, you know, transcripts in, you know, such a short time. It was really encouraging and inspiring to, you know, see how, like, an idea, right, can be so impactful for people. You know, he was essentially schooling us on the product, like, hey, here's what I did. I was able to, like, figure this thing out so easily and use it to really speed up my research. Yeah, I talked to a couple of, I think, 5-6 participants doing a study, and then was able to, you know, transcribe all of them, all the interviews, analyze them, generated a report, and it was showing us everything, and I was really excited and giving great feedback. And so, like, those stories are the things that fuel us. Those stories fuel us to really continue investing in product, because we know we build something people want and people are getting a lot of value from, right? Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. So speaking on the UX researcher, right, I concur with everything you said. Another thing that I see Insight 7 does already, just from even just going through the free trial, is it helps with collaboration. So right now in the organization that I work at, we use Miro, and Miro has an AI tool, right? And yes, Miro does help with the collaboration. But one thing that Insight 7 does is everything is there, the documentation. I can have my transcripts there. Anyone who's working on the same project with me can see those things. So aside from, you know, the report or the conversation we would have, you know, based on everything we've learned, stakeholders can still go into Insight 7 and watch recordings or listen to recordings. So it's really amazing. The documentation bit is great. You know, as teams are changing and transitioning, at least we know Insight 7 has everything and nothing's getting lost. You know, we don't have to search too many places to find things. So honestly, well done. You guys are doing something amazing. I can't wait to see, you know, where Insight 7 gets to in like the next
years. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Awesome. So can you, I know I saw on your LinkedIn that you shared that the prioritization feature had just been launched, right? Are there any other upcoming features that, you know, we should get excited about?
Yeah.
In the pipeline.
Yeah, definitely. We are getting a lot more feedback from users, and they're, you know, asking us to continue to make improvements. So one of those features is what we're calling trends. So we've gotten feedback that, you know, users want to see patterns in their data. So as they're getting feedback from customers in a continuous way, they want to see trends in terms of the insights and the themes that they're getting from those customers. And so that's a really important one that we're trying to ship soon. We're also getting requests around, you know, segmentation, help me segment my customers, help me understand the users behind the data. And so we're investing in that area as well to provide intelligence around the customer profiles, to be able to segment them, to be able to engage with them in a unique way, to be able to track, you know, a history of conversations you've had with those customers. That is another key area that we're working on. And I think maybe the big one that we're also working on is what we call Pulse. So Pulse is a way for you to continuously, you know, get insights from all the feedback that you're getting from customers. So it's not just when you have a study or when you have a project you're trying to work on. It's more of like, how do I hear continuously from customers and understand what they're saying every week? So you start your Monday and the first thing is you get an email from us saying, hey, here are the key things that happened last week. Here are some ideas. Here are some recommendations of what to work on this week. Like, that would be a great, like, assistant for any product person, right?
Absolutely fantastic, honestly.
To kind of help you be focused, be very customer-centric, and make sure that you're on top of everything, right? You feel like you're in control of all the feedback coming in. So, yeah, those are some of the things that we're working on, and hoping to ship in the next couple of weeks.
Again, absolutely fantastic. Like, I see Insight 7 just making it so easy to know, like, to be confident in what you know about your product. Like, the amount of time you would have to go, you know, crawling on the internet, going on social media, going through your app reviews, all those things is going to shorten down the time. That is absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to see all these new features. Well done. Well done to your
Thank
team.
You.
So we'll be rounding off very soon. I'm just, you know, would like to hear from you if there's any advice you have for, you know, upcoming entrepreneurs, people who have an idea, you know, maybe they've done some, you know, trying to validate their idea and they're in that process right now. What advice would you give to them? So not just entrepreneurs, product managers, maybe they just have an idea and they're not sure what to do next. They're not so confident in that idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest lesson on this journey has been around, like, don't start writing code as the first thing. Like, don't start writing code. You're going to pay for it, either in lost time, lost money. You lose tens of thousands of dollars building the wrong stuff. Don't start with the code. Start with the customer experience. What are you trying to ship? And once you nail that experience, then you start writing code to build the experience. Like, this is a hard lesson, man. You know, even when you've been burned sometimes, you still make this mistake. But it's important to keep that lesson in mind. Like, start with the experience. And so what I wish we did earlier is, when we were launching our MVP, we should have spent more time in the prototyping phase before we started building. Now, when we started building like data models of product, so the underlying foundation, which I knew we always need, and that was fine. But in terms of the user experience, we shouldn't have built anything until we had done more validation of the experience and, you know, the prototypes we're trying to built, right? So what you have today, many people just go jump from, okay, I validated the problem, and then they start building the solution. They don't validate the experience of the solution before they start building it. And that's the in-between thing. So you don't jump, you find you validate the problem, but you don't know what the right solution is. Can I spend more time validating that solution through prototypes with users before you then start to build those prototypes? And it'll save you a lot of money and a lot of time. And so today, one example there is the way we thought people were going to do multi-document analysis is not the way they're doing it today. We went to build like a tool, a UI that was going to help people like select multiple documents and analyze them and shit. But people are doing that in a different way today. They will load, you know, those documents into a folder and they will analyze it, you know, in one click. And so that was probably what we should have started with. And so you learn that the hard way, but there are cheaper ways to do that, to validate that. That's the big idea.
That's so insightful. Thank you. So from your own hard lesson now, we're learning that in the easy way. And I think this is the benefit of things like this, right? Thank you so much for sharing that. So is there something about Insight 7 that maybe people don't really know, or maybe you personally, something you don't mind sharing with us? Not like the secrets that I promise take to your grave, but something that, you know, you could be a little bit vulnerable about here. Just maybe that would be a lesson for
people. One thing people don't know. I have to think hard about this one. In terms of how we came about the name, the idea was we always knew the product would be about insights. And insights would never like go away. So we didn't want to have a name that, you know, maybe if we went into another market, then the name doesn't scale. You know, we wanted to be about insights. So insights was going to be in the name. It was not like, okay, what else do you add to that? And then we chose 7 because 7 means like completeness. It's a symbol, you know, for completeness. So we wanted to be that platform where companies had all their insights in. We give you the complete view of your customer. That's what we're building up. And then the bot, the AI within our product, we call it Sev as a short form of 7. Maybe that's like a fun fact. What's your...
Oh, yeah, that is actually fun. I also wanted to say, I really love your naming convention. So you mentioned, you know, the features that are being built, trends, calls. I really love the name. It's just perfect. It just captures what those tools or what those features do perfectly.
Yeah, we try. We do a lot of brainstorming internally. And yeah, we try to keep things very simple for users. We're really obsessed about the user experience. If there's anything like that, that's the one thing. I mean, I was in a user feedback session this week. And then someone was trying to give some feedback about something he struggled with on an app. And he was also trying to show us how he used another app, I won't mention their name, beside, like, at the same time as ours, to do something else that he was struggling with in our app. And then he was struggling with navigating that app right in front of us. And I saw how he was using our app, and it was seamless, it was easy. And so for me, that's delightful because that's what we care about. We care about people just coming in and figuring it out without... And it's like when last did you read a product manual? Like when you open new products today, your phone, your devices or gadgets, whatever you buy, you just start using it. And I think software needs to be that way. Nobody's trying to watch demos anymore. They just want to get into the product and use it. And so we need to build the best possible, you know, experience to help people do that.
I absolutely love that. Like, you're actually right. How many people even look at those 30-second demos, right? But still, you know, even though they're there, maybe for the time when the experience is difficult, but it's amazing hearing that feedback that, you know, people are actually having good, great experiences using the product. That's amazing. And it speaks well for your team, right? I can't even imagine what goes on behind the veil, but it speaks well. At least the output is amazing. Yeah. Well done to you and your team, honestly. So I have one final question. I know you might be hesitant to reveal all the eggs in your basket, right? But, you know, maybe just release some for us. Where do you see Insight 7 being in the next, let's say, 2 to 5 years?
In the next 2 to 5 years, it's interesting. We had a team retreat last weekend, and this question came up. And my answer was that I want us to be, in many ways, I want us to be a model company in terms of our culture and how we work and kind of products we bring to life. We care about innovation, it's in our DNA, we care about speed, and we care about user experience. I want those things to shine through in terms of like the kind of products we build and how we work. The other thing is I really want us to be successful as a business that generates its own revenue. I don't want us to be heavily dependent on VC funding. I want us to be very I want us to generate revenue as a business, as a product that people value and pay for, and grow that way, right? I come from a bootstrap background, and so try to integrate that into how we execute, stay lean, but focus on the customer and generate revenue from them. And so that's the other piece in terms of what's really important. And I think maybe the final thing would just be about us being, changing the game, just changing how people think about products, how people work, having a lot of impact for our customers. And then by extension, those customers can build better products for the world. And so that impact is really important for me, for the team. That's what we're about. We really want to help customers be successful and help people create better products out there. And if we achieve that, then we're really successful as a company.
That's so amazing. Like hearing you talk this conversation so far, like I see resilience, I see self-awareness, I see determination, and I can already see that it translates to what you're building, and I can't wait for other people to see it. One more thing, actually, is there do you have like a free trial discount code, anything for people listening? Maybe if you have a couple of people that want to try out Inside 7.
Yeah, sure. We interestingly we launched our free plan this last week, and awesome. Before now you had to put in your credit card before you go into the app because we wanted very serious early customers, but then we're moving beyond that now. So we open it up. You can go in there and use it yourself without a credit card and see the value that the product provides. And so that's something that is available to everyone.
Oh, that's amazing. So I will have Inside 7 linked, the website linked in the show notes as well. So yes, Odun, thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation. I feel like I've taken up just enough of your time. Thank you so much. You've been like a great sport. Did you have any final things you wanted to say before we round up?
Yeah, I think it's just like words of encouragement for builders out there. Like building is hard. It's hard on many fronts. It's hard to convince people to join you on that journey. It's hard to get customers to give you a chance in the early days. It's hard to get investors to bet on you in the early days, but you have to have a high degree of confidence in yourself and your vision, those two things, and that will help you navigate those challenging times. And then once you start to get traction, everybody comes around. It's just the way it works. And so, yeah, words of encouragement for anyone trying to build anything out there today.
And that's fantastic. Can I also plug in that Inside 7 will help you get to that confidence that you need to get to, right? But yeah. Once you're sure about what you're building, once you've spoken to your customers and you're using Inside 7, you definitely get to where you need to be. Thank you, Odun.
Absolutely.
So thank you all for joining us on this absolutely fantastic episode with Odun, the co-founder and CEO of Inside 7. We've explored the impact of customer insights, product strategy, and innovation, gaining really valuable knowledge from Odun's extensive entrepreneurial experience, from the transformative potential of AI-driven customer feedback analysis to the strategic importance of data-driven decision-making. I think we've uncovered the keys to success in product development. Remember, understanding your customers deeply is the path to creating exceptional products that truly resonate. We hope this episode has ignited your curiosity and inspired you to embark on your own product journey. So, subscribe to this podcast for more engaging conversations and thought-provoking discussions. And of course, don't forget to check out Inside 7's free plan
at insight7.io for a game-changing approach to customer insights. Till next time, bye.